that's fundamentally what everything rotates around and pivots around inside Fulcrum. It's real-time data driving decisions on when to do something, when to buy something, when to ship something, when to hire more people, when not to, from quoting all the way through invoicing at the end of the production run to collecting the cash and integrating invoice or inventory values with accounting systems. So that's the breadth of what Fulcrum is right now.
This is the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nestle and Associates, a Newport Beach, California-based ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. The ERP OCJ seeks to share expertise, insight, experience, and research, and to create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success. And now, here's your co-host Jonathan Donald, founder of the change management firm Invert Ventures, and your ERP expert and host, the founder of Nestle and Associates, Dr. Jack Nestle.
Hey, Jack here. We have a great show today as we highlight an ERP vendor and their take on ERP software innovation. Jonathan?
On today's episode, we're discussing ERP, What is Fulcrum? With Sunny Han. Fulcrum is a manufacturing SaaS ERP solution. Our episode will further examine Fulcrum ERP and its competitive differentiators. We have Mr. Sunny Han, who's the founder of Fulcrum ERP, with us today. Fulcrum is a software as a service ERP, MRP, and MES platform, allowing small and medium-sized manufacturers to improve efficiency through workflow optimization and automated data collection with advanced heuristics. Jack, I'm excited to have Sunny on the show.
Likewise, Jonathan. Thanks for the intro. So let's dive in. So as Jonathan mentioned, in this episode, we will discuss a specific ERP and its differentiators. And before we get started, I'd like to just share an important notion as we've discussed in previous shows and blogs. And that is, as we know from anecdotal evidence, practice, and research, there's one best ERP solution and partner for each and every unique organization. But what does that really mean? And the organization needs to take the time and effort to find that one best fit, right? So, and without making assumptions, but how? In fact, research suggests that ERP system selection, implementation methodology, and partner selection is critical for successful ERP organizational change. So for instance, there are nearly 100 discrete manufacturing ERP vendors. And some ERP vendors cater to specific industries, while some cater across industries. Some come with specific configurations and have hundreds of pre-configured business processes. Some cater to the specific niches with one configuration. Some have been around since the beginning of the ERP era, and some that we don't know about yet, but will bring to the market new and exciting products with creativity and innovation are right around the corner. And so ERP solutions utilize different models and often cater to different business needs as well. Some have all the bells and whistles and try to be everything to everyone. Others are very industry specific and cater to a niche market. And moreover, they often employ technology differently, as we're going to learn a little bit more about today, and have different approaches to functionality, implementation, and business modeling. They have different competitive differentiators and drive how they advertise as well and approach the market. There's free and open source ERP, and there are proprietary ERP vendors as well. And there are ERP vendors that focus on add-ons only. The point with that is that what matters and what really makes a difference for an organization's success is being mindful of how critical the triad, the people, processes, and technology are, and hence the true differentiators that ERP solutions, as in terms of their systems and their partnership, bring to the table for the organization. So let's learn more with our guest as we discuss what value can ERP solutions, partners, their team, and their processes contribute to ERP success. We'll ask Mr. Han about the value of system selection, sustainable performance, and the biggest challenges in implementing ERP. And one last thing before we get started, I think it's prudent to mention that Nestle & Associates is vendor neutral. While in practice and research, we do work with ERP vendors, their partners, and specific ERP vendors every single day. We currently have nearly 50 ERP vendors and their partners queued up to be on our podcast. And while all we consider friends and colleagues, some we may have worked with previously and some we may not have worked with previously. Nonetheless, NNA approaches ERP selection in an academic, research-based way. Please contact us anytime to learn more. In our conversations with our ERP vendor colleagues, we, Nestle and Associates, take a vendor-neutral approach with open-ended questions and pick the brain of our guests so that our listeners are more informed, and then we leave it up to our listeners to reflect. So today we welcome Mr. Sunny Han, the founder of Fulcrum ERP, joining us from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Sunny, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're really looking forward to it. I know you have some pretty exciting things going on with Fulcrum. I do think you certainly have some differentiators, and I'm excited to share that with our listeners.
Awesome.
Sunny, so nice to have you on the show. So Sunny, please tell us more about yourself and introduce yourself and Fulcrum to our listeners.
Yeah, we've existed as a company for just about 7 years now. I started the company off of the back of a career that I stumbled into after I graduated from school, right in the beginning of the recession. My first job was doing turnaround analysis for small and mid-sized manufacturers. At that time, there were a lot of companies that were unfortunately just going through a huge amount of volatility, losing orders, potentially not being able to make payments on their equipment loans and things like that. It was a really sad time. But what I'm grateful for during that time is that I was able to see hundreds of different businesses in a relatively short amount of time and learn a lot about manufacturing from within these businesses. After that, I had a fairly long career doing what you do in a different setting, helping clients select ERP systems, helping them then implement them, writing custom software on top of them, writing custom software on the side and integrating it. And really, that experience of providing those services to these small manufacturers is really what led me to believe that I could do something more valuable than what I saw in the marketplace. So when we first started off, a lot of the work that we did here at Fulcrum was continuing that custom software development. And instead of doing any one module, we built 5 fully custom ERPs end to end. And I think that experience took a long time. It took a few years for us to get through that. I think you can probably imagine how complicated some of these custom systems became. But I think it's that experience of knowing what needs to be done, thinking about our experience and building it exactly for that particular business. That's what really allowed us to have some insights into what we believe are philosophical differences in how we approach this product development and implementation.
Interesting. Sunny, the first question I have, I've actually asked this question to many of our guests because it is interesting to see how they define ERP, and the answer is actually varied quite a bit. But how would you define ERP for our listeners?
I think a piece of the context that many people might not know is that the acronym ERP is pretty old, and it actually has more to do with Star Trek and being able to sell this concept of a centralized computer database than anything else. And so in that regard, the ERP has taken on a meaning that's grown beyond that. But internally, we talk about Fulcrum being an operating system. And it's an operating system just like you have Windows or macOS or whatever operating system that you use. We build Fulcrum to be something that a variety of different manufacturers can use. Sometimes that means that we're building things that some of our customers don't need. Other times it means that we're changing the paradigm of how we think about certain concepts like scheduling or forecasting or demand planning. But fundamentally, our goal is to make Fulcrum something that's really valuable out of the box and can be extended upon, built on top of, and configured to make it fit our customers really well. So for me, it's anything that touches the operations of one of our customers' pieces of data, whether that's a sales order or an invoice or a production order or a job or a bill of materials. There's this web of data that's really important and fundamentally interrelated and integrated within these companies. And that's really what is important to us, is capturing that information, automating as much of the decision-making process as possible, and making insights available passively as people are using the system.
Sunny, I really like that definition, especially the broadening of scope, the recognition of where it started from, and the view of an operating system. And I want to carry those insights into, how do you see the benefits of being a niche custom ERP platform? And how do you differentiate the value you offer versus tier one players that claim they have the same function? What's the value add for a smaller manufacturing firm?
Yeah, we've largely moved away from that custom methodology where all of our customers are SaaS customers. They have the same shared code base. It's a different world now since the roots that we came from. I think that niche custom experience gave us an understanding of kind of what the boundaries are, what we could do that was clever and different, and what we did that was bad, that the customers maybe or the clients maybe asked for and paid for, but actually weren't good ideas. So I think it gave us some better intuition on how to develop the product. For Fulcrum, we're very small still. We have, you know, a couple hundred customers. We're growing. We're three times larger than we were before. We just received $20 million of venture funding to help us accelerate the growth of our development team. So there's a lot of things that are going for us. But I think the primary value that we have is that what we build is based on a philosophical understanding of how we affect our customers. In the software development and technology space, there's this concept called Conway's Law. And it basically says, when you build a piece of software, how you organize your team, how your team talks to each other, whether you want it or not, influences the way that your software is architected. And we extend this definition one layer further. And we say that what Fulcrum is will fundamentally change our customers' businesses because data is more integrated in our system. It's live. Data is collected real time and piped into analytics right within the application real time. When you have that, things that you used to have to communicate through a production meeting are just known by more people. And those types of effects are going to change the communication architecture of your business. And for anybody who's ever been the CEO of a business or a president or someone who's in charge of pushing forward culture and the way that your business works, communication architecture is the primary job. So I think for us, one thing that we see that was a hypothesis 7 years ago, but now has some evidence that it's actually real, is that making data live changes people's communication architectures for the better, almost agnostic of where they came from, whether they're very hierarchical or they're very flat, whether they're very decentralized and have multiple production locations or they're all very centralized to one location. What we've seen is that with our customers, regardless of what type of business they are, the way that their communication architecture has evolved from adopting Fulcrum is way better. And there's a lot of things that we had to do to allow for that effect. We try to think about our business in every facet to support this mission of getting data to people faster, making the system easier to use, easier to train, easier to adopt, easier to implement. And so we have an unlimited user model. There's, if you add another user, add another employee, there's no additional cost. We have unlimited storage for documents and information. We spent a huge amount of engineering time making the user experience really nice and really user-friendly. We have self-upload tools and self-configurable tools so that our users can change the product themselves and be warned of whether a change is dangerous or not. And all of this is to reiteratively drive home that point. You should be able to implement our system within 8 to 12 weeks instead of 8 to 12 months or even longer. You shouldn't have to spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in consulting time to just set the product up. You should be spending as much of that time as possible adopting this new technology, hiring people potentially to help you go through change management if you need that, and doing a lot more things that are more human focused and letting the technology and the software itself kind of just manifest as smoothly and as easily as possible. So that's a lot of words and kind of a rambling explanation, but hopefully that gives you a sense of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, Sonny, no, that's a great response. I think it's very insightful. And frankly, I think it really explains your success to date. I could discuss your response to Jonathan's question for an hour. That was very helpful. So thank you. And by the way, question number one here and how you defined ERP. After years and years of research and practice, both formally and informal with the research, I think that's the first time that any ERP vendor told me they're not really an ERP vendor, they're an operating system. So that was an interesting response there. But before we get more into the product, if I may, I have a question. I think Jonathan may as well, along the lines of ERP implementations. So that being said, how would you describe your general understanding of ERP implementation success rates in the field? I'm talking about in general, not just Fulcrum, but just across the board. Sure. What would be your response?
I would say that there are multiple success or failure states, so it's a little hard to bucket.
Yeah.
I think what ends up happening that's potentially the saddest is that, you know, humans feel the sunk cost fallacy very deeply.
Yeah.
And what I see the most is a failure state that's the ERP is implemented, people are using it, it's actually delivering less value, and the company was better off before they're using it, but they paid for it, They're going to make it work. And it just adds a layer of baggage that makes that company less nimble, less profitable, less everything. So those might not be classified in the failure states that people report in statistics. And I think the numbers are fairly bad right now, pretty bad. I think something like 45% is what my number would be in the top of my head, where the solution is ultimately abandoned or reverted or not fully deployed and only certain modules may be used. But I think that number is even worse than that if you include all the companies that have fully adopted it, but it's not actually helping them.
Yeah, Sonny, I focus on the human side and the process side of change, and 45 seems a bit generous from the numbers I'm looking at. What I'm curious at in your earlier answer, so I want to dig in a little more here, is how do you and your team describe success in terms of ERP, or to use your words, a operating system transformation?
We have three primary criteria. The first is, do employees and end users enjoy using the system and are able to use it and train other people without a binder or a training guide or a video to watch? That's the number one piece of success, because as with any other system, the entry of the information is incredibly important, right? The ownership, the leadership, the management is a much smaller group than the people that are actually using the system. And if it's an impressive and easy and fun experience for them, we're going to get more data, and more data means better insight. That's the first point of success. Can we get the end users to really happily adopt it and use it without being forced to through some sort of incentive or some sort of marching order? Can we get them to organically and naturally want to use our system and do so with very little training? And so part of that might be configuration, might be removing certain features, turning some feature flags off or on, and understanding the customer's business process well enough to be able to do that. But that's really important to us. That's number one. The second is the average person who's looking at information from within Fulcrum getting more information out of it? And we'll ask our customers, are there any insights that you've gotten that you otherwise wouldn't have, or insights that you have would have been able to, but you maybe are disincentivized to do it because you have to go into some filing cabinet and pull five different files and assemble something in a spreadsheet? Are there any instances, any anecdotes since you've been using Fulcrum that you can answer that? And do you have any stories? And if the answer is no, then I think we failed at that point. I think the third is, can we measure some sort of statistical improvement in throughput, or in a reduction in waste and scrap, or in an increase in utilization or uptime of whatever the limited resource is, whether it's humans or it's work centers? I think that's a much more hard statistical piece of data to collect. And it takes a lot longer to garner that particular piece of feedback. But those are the three pillars of how we benchmark success in Fulcrum's usage.
So Sonny, we alluded to this a little bit earlier, actually with questions 1 and 3, but in general, what is Fulcrum Manufacturing ERP exactly? Can you elaborate a little bit more on your product and just dig just a little bit deeper? What is it and who would your customers be?
Yeah, I think that for right now, at least, we're not a perfect fit for everybody. And we've strategically chosen to be the best fit for a smaller number of organizations. But at a high level, and we'll dig in a few layers, so bear with me here. But at a high level, we want to be a longitudinally valuable ERP system for manufacturing. What I mean by that is that a lot of systems are focused on one specific industry. A lot of systems may be focused on one specific process or one specific type of work. For us, we believe that manufacturing is and will continue to be a team sport. So if we want to create some system that will do something futuristic, like network all these businesses together and allow them to share data, allow them to work together, at its core, Fulcrum has to be longitudinal. It has to be just as valuable for a CNC machine shop as it is for a sheet metal laser cutting fabricator, as it is for a powder coater, as it is for a process manufacturer. And there are certain areas that we're stronger in and certain areas that we're not. But that's kind of at the high level what we're trying to achieve. Digging in a little bit deeper, for right now, Fulcrum does not have hard CRM functionality. It doesn't have accounting functionality. We integrate with a lot of different accounting systems out of the box, and that is how we adopt that. But everything in between, once you have an opportunity, or you need to create a quote, or you need to build a bill of materials, or you need to store a drawing or a file, or you need to take a sales order in or issue an invoice or create a job for the shop floor, or record data from that shop floor job, or set up what quality control metrics and statistical process tracking and in-process tracking checkpoints that you have, and then what information, what work instructions you need to give to your shop floor employees. And we do all of that in a way that's fundamentally as paperless as our customers want to get. But that is really the crux of it. In the beginning, we tried to solve just the scheduling problem, because that's a really difficult NP-hard computational problem that many people have tried to solve, and it's hard to solve. And what we realized is the underlying problem wasn't with these fancy heuristics or AI/ML methods. It was with the fact that most people are printing out a traveler, writing information on it, and then maybe a week from then, 2 weeks from then, when the whole job is done, somebody's manually entering it back into the ERP. And I can't schedule with 2 weeks of blindness, not nearly as well as I otherwise would be able to with real-time data. And what happened since the 1980s until now is that the average order size has gone down. The amount of blanket orders has gone up. We want, as large end assemblers, we want to have just-in-time inventory. We want to have things delivered in bursts every 2 weeks, every week, every day sometimes. And the problem of scheduling has actually gotten harder and harder to solve because of that, even for the same size of company. And so the only cure for that is to be able to provide our scheduling engine with as close to live data as possible. And the only way to do that is to build functionality that makes the shop floor employee, the operator, the machinist, whoever they are, to want to use this nice tablet device that reminds them of some game they've played on their phone or some Instagram experience that they had. That's the type of experience that we need to give them to engage them and make sure that we're collecting that information as quickly as possible. And there's a lot of other companies that have approached this problem by trying to collect machine information. But we fundamentally believe, after thinking about it, that humans are going to be involved in this data production for quite some time, for 10 years, 20 years, minimum. And so we've actually done the opposite. We've invested in making the human interface really, really, really good to encourage the live and real-time ability to collect this data. So that's fundamentally what everything rotates around and pivots around inside Fulcrum. It's real-time data driving decisions on when to do something, when to buy something, when to ship something, when to hire more people, when not to, from quoting all the way through invoicing at the end of the production run to collecting the cash and integrating inventory values with accounting systems. So that's the breadth of what Fulcrum is right now.
Sonny, I'm sitting with your answer and a couple of the insights that are coming up that I want to highlight for our listeners is it looks like you took a different path in recognizing that humans are going to be involved in those decisions, so to orient your technology towards them. It sounds like that's one of your differentiators. And it reminds me of something I saw on your website. I'm going to state this for our listeners. Intuition is experience. Building amazing things requires more than seeking approval. Leadership is about being the first one to talk about the most awkward, difficult, and tense things. Everyone wants to be known. And then you mentioned that Vue.js is the future.
No, Vue is a little bit of an insider software programmer joke. Vue is a beautiful framework for front-end web application development. And the guy who created it left Google to build it. And a lot of what they're doing, making software development a lot faster, a lot more lightweight, a lot more reactive, a lot more animation-based, I believe that that is the future. But Vue.js is a framework that some software systems use to program their front-end, the part of the application that the end user sees and interacts with.
So tell us more for us and our listeners about how Vue relates to your competitive advantage of what you just told us about designing for humans. And what does that enable?
Yeah, I think that a lot of ERP systems, and this is not trying to be diminutive, I think this is what the industry was in the 1980s and 1990s. A lot of systems are architected around the fact that the primary value that we get out of them is a report, is a way to take data and information that otherwise was on paper and otherwise was hard to tabulate. And it provides us with answers to questions like, how on time am I in shipping? Or how am I doing? Or who's doing better or worse? Or what jobs made money and what jobs didn't? And those are really, really, really important questions to answer. I think one thing that we believe is that those questions are very easy to answer now. The questions that are hard to answer are, what should I do next? How should I think about my business? Where can I spend my time to improve my business the most? And those answers aren't really answerable by a report. They're answerable by a human, because the data will never give us the insight as to the intention of the person that owns the business or the intention of the person that's running the floor. And I think that trying to make software reflect the intentions of people is where a lot of implementation goes wrong. We have an intention that's right now, a problem that exists currently. Once we solve it and our entire ERP system is structured around that problem and that problem no longer exists, we might not actually be able to solve the next problem that exists. So for us, we want to make sure that whatever the problems that we commonly see at all these different manufacturers, there's a way to answer those questions and get the context and provide the intuition to enhance the decision making for these humans and do it in a way that doesn't philosophically lock you out of solving a different problem downstream. So for us, we believe that that human that's looking at Fulcrum, that's interacting with it, has a bunch of computing power and a bunch of context that Fulcrum will never have. And so that's really what informs us in trying to design the entire system to enhance a human's brain instead of trying to replace it.
So, Sunny, you know, obviously there's a cost of doing business in what is a very competitive market, i.e. the ERP space. But you state in your website that you are, quote, different from the ground up, new technology to support a new resurgence of manufacturing growth. Moving faster requires more data and better automation supported by new platform, end quote. So can you share with our listeners, maybe this is a part of the $1 million question, but from a technology perspective, so just think of this in terms of technology at the moment, if you would, how are you different from ERP vendors then? And I know intentionally this is a pretty open question deliberately, but how are you different from ERP vendors such as, let's say, Oracle, SAP, Infor, and so forth? What would you say to a potential customer?
Yeah, I think we have a different social contract with our customer. We have an agreed upon price on a monthly basis or annual basis that we hold with them for the duration of our relationship until it's time to renew that arrangement. That allows us to give a much more generous kind of all you can eat buffet type experience so that they feel like they have the freedom to grow without incurring more costs. Because of that, we kind of revolve a lot of other decisions around this desire to maximize the value that we deliver. For other systems like SAP, there's a lot more freedom to customize SAP. You don't have the ability to alter forms everywhere in Fulcrum. There are some opinions that we make about how you should ingest data and how you should enter data and what you should look at. There's some customizability and configurability, but it's far more limited. But because of that, we're able to have a social contract where I can tell you that the experience you'll have on Fulcrum is that you will always have the newest technologies, every single update as live as possible. And we will be very considerate and thoughtful of not being disruptive of changing your experience in a jarring way. And I think that most people who have used Gmail or they've used Instagram or they've used some other product that's web-based, that's cloud-based, you've already been used to this experience. You've already understood this social contract. It would be very weird for you to have a huge, major change in the way that any one of these pieces of software work only once every 2 years. And for the interim, it's identically the same. That social contract allows us to provide more value every single day by added a new receivables widget that allows you to really quickly filter and sort between who owes you money and how to send emails to them and automate that dunning process. Everybody got that. It was really widely well received. Nobody had to do some sort of on-premise server upgrade. Well, now that we're on the cloud and we're able to do this, well, what we can do is we can actually, instead of being bound by the server that you own on site, we can go to Amazon or Microsoft and rent for a really short period of time, for a minute, a really fast supercomputer to compute your schedule. And now we're able to solve problems in a very different way. And because we're able to do that, we're able to now have 20, 50, 100, 200 devices, 2,000 devices on the shop floor that are all feeding data to Fulcrum simultaneously. And they don't have to be talking to an on-premise server. You don't have to hire anybody to wire your shop differently. As long as those devices have internet, they're all able to talk to Fulcrum. And because of that, you're able to see and use Fulcrum from your house if you can't go to the shop floor or go into the office because of COVID or some other reason. And so there's a widely rippling eddy effect of all these other related decisions that comes from the fact that we're going to change the way that we sell it. We're going to change the way that we deploy it. And we're going to change the way that we build it and develop it. So I don't think that you could change just one thing about how typical ERP systems work and have it actually be very different. I think we had to build it from the ground up. It wasn't, you know, on purpose. It was maybe accidental, but it works in harmony with each other to have all these decisions coordinated.
Very interesting insight. Thanks,
Sunny. Appreciate it.
It'll be interesting to have another interview with you and to share with our listeners your incredible success over the next few years.
Thank you.
It's clear to me that this idea of making technology work for business and work for people, you know, you're on to something here. So
I would say so as well. Sunny, we're going to change gears here and focus on the people for the next couple of questions. So aside from all of Fulcrum technology that's structured for people, what is your approach for helping customers implement and realize the improvements, not just implementing them, but realize the improvements for the way they do business?
Yeah, internally here, we have a incredible implementation and launch team, we call them. There's a few things that we do to try to make that process a lot better for our customers. One is that we have a single person in charge internally, and they're there for a focused amount of time for as long as they need. There's no window for how long it needs to take. There, we obviously try to encourage our process to be as fast as possible, but if they need 3 months or 2 months and they need help uploading data, they need somebody just to sit there and work with them on a spreadsheet to get information uploaded, we're there for them. It's not billable by the hour. It's a very low cost fixed fee that's, you know, usually even for a really big company, just in the few thousands of dollars. It's not about making money on that engagement. It's more about making sure that we're providing whatever resources to start what should be a long-term relationship off on as good of a foot as possible. It also is selfish too. It provides us with a really great avenue for feedback on what's working in the product, what isn't, what's working in implementation, what isn't. And it allows our engineers to get really great insight on what to change. And we've gotten a lot of product improvements just through doing it that way. Certainly the venture capital helps us to fund that type of behavior. But what we're seeing is that human relation, doing things for them, serving them, that's a really big thing that we do that's different. And it helps the customer believe and understand and feel that we're invested in them as much as they're investing their time and their staff on Fulcrum itself.
So, Sonny, I have another, I guess, people-related question. And as an ERP software company, obviously you sell and implement software. Mm-hmm. But what would you say is the largest influence to ERP organizational change success? ERP implementation, what we call at Nestle & Associates, is ERP organizational change endeavor at the end of the day, right? But what would you say is the largest influence? Is it the people, the process? Is it the tech? Is it the system or some combination thereof?
I think it's a combination of all of them. I think it does start with the internal hierarchy and politics of our customer. We can't change that. And oftentimes they can't change that. But things that we see a lot are in the sales process to make sure that not only the technology fits, but also the way that we want you to do business fits. And so our sales process is less of a dog and pony show and less of a demo and much more of a discovery process where we're asking a ton of questions. We ask for a lot of patience from our customers. But at the end of that, we can show them something very quickly. We don't have to leave the call. We can just configure the product right in front of them and show them, here's how I think that you would use Fulcrum. And I think doing that really honestly and really thoroughly is a big part of our success, is that we're able to select the right customers, but also within the sales process say, here are things that you critically need to change. And if you don't want to change them, after implementation is not the time to find that out. Before the sale is done is when the time to find it out is. And I think we align our incentives and our team internally to be able to support that. But I think that if you can imagine, if the three of us all had very different goals for the business and we all try to use the exact same technology to fulfill different needs, there's a lack of alignment there that can't be resolved by any piece of technology. So I think just making sure that everybody from the accounts payable person all the way up to the CEO of the company, everybody has to understand what they're gaining and what they're losing, so that when things get uncomfortable and some people have to change more than others and some people's experiences will be worse a little bit while others will be greatly improved, those have to be known. The why has to be communicated and we have to be able to fall back on that when things get tough. So for us, we really want to highlight that. We really want to highlight what the whole organization is getting and we want to really give that why to everybody. No matter how much power or how much control they might have in the organization, we internally talk about how every person inside that organization deserves to know why this is the right decision for the company. And that contributes to our success quite a bit.
So let's focus in on the technology piece of that.
Yeah.
Right now, for you and Fulcrum, what are you looking at in emerging technology that's making you excited? And what are you hoping to do with it?
So I think that there's a lot of need in manufacturing specifically for the technologies we deploy to be robust. And just like the iPhone didn't really borrow any technologies that were really that new, they just packaged it in a nice, clever way. For us, we like to stay on top of emerging technologies, but really what excites us is when that emerging technology becomes really robust and really scalable. So people have been talking about artificial intelligence and machine learning for a long period of time, since the 70s, 60s, if you can argue that. It's only recently been possible for those pieces of functionality and technology to be available at a low cost in a way that can be deployed really quickly and be incorporated into products really quickly. Now, it's not easy by any means, but it certainly is now at a price point of cost and of effort where we can make it valuable for our customers. And for our customers, our customers are not Boeing. They're not big Fortune 500 companies that have billions of dollars on their balance sheet. Our customers require us to be able to deliver them a product that has the economy of scale built into it, that it can be affordable, that it isn't a huge line item on their profit and loss statement. And in order for that to be the case, it's far more valuable for us when technologies are scalable, not when they're potentially just really new. But I think that internet getting faster, 5G speeds and devices getting cheaper, tablets and actual end devices getting cheaper as well, the prevalence of quicker, easier to deploy and use augmented reality devices that both Google and Facebook and some other big tech companies are working on. Those are the technologies that they're not super emerging anymore. They're pretty robust, but they're starting to get to small and mid-market business scale. And that's what we're excited about. So we think that in the next 2 or 3 years, those types of technologies are going to play a huge role in helping these smaller businesses and organizations that are doing the primary fabrication most of the time, helping them function more like a big company.
Very interesting, Sonny. Thanks for that. I would like to switch gears and maybe ask you some process related questions. So we talked a little bit about the people, a little bit about the technology and your product. And now I'd like to pick your brain a little bit here on more ERP organizational change process related questions. And as you'd mentioned earlier, you know, from your view, and I think most people's view who's been in this field for any length of time, understand that ERP organizational change can be very challenging.
So my question is, what is more likely? One, nearly perfect success with no major challenges, or two, some challenges, and sometimes often significant, but the organization endures due to strong culture and therefore success?
Culture is the only important thing. A company, an organization is a group of people. It's not just the machines in the building. So the stronger the culture, the more resilient it's going to be. I don't think an ERP can help with that or enhance a company's culture that much. But I do think that when we find a company that has a really strong culture, they tend to push harder to be better and to be less satisfied with who they are at that point in time and try to reach for greater achievement. So I would say the latter for sure, that the endurance and perseverance of a strong culture will supersede a lot of luck and a lot of other extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, very much agree.
Sonny, continuing the process vein here, what do you and Fulcrum feel about implementation processes as a differentiator for your business? And how do you approach your implementation process? You mentioned a few things earlier. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, we try to keep our process, as maybe put in air quotes, as flexible as possible. The key components and the key milestones that we'll put in there, the first is just having an incredibly human experience. I remember early in my career, I just asked a ton of questions because I didn't know anything. And it was actually really useful. It was useful for me to understand the customer very specifically, the client, as we called them back then. And it was also very important for the client to believe that I knew because they heard me ask the question. I think as my career developed, I just knew a lot more things. I could see it. I knew what that was. I knew what was happening. And I stopped asking those questions because I was only serving my own interests of knowing something. And so one thing that we really harp on here is that customer journey. Of where they start and where they end, no matter what happened in the sales process, our implementation folks are told, understand their process. If it's a stupid question and it makes you look like you don't understand their industry, even if you do, doesn't matter. Ask it. Ask it in a way to verify, ask it in a way to be genuinely curious, but fundamentally ask it. So for the first period of time, our first milestone is, do we believe that we understand their business very deeply? Do we believe we understand their culture, their organization very deeply? And do we believe that they believe that we understand it? And if those two conditions are correct, then we can move on to a bunch of other parallel processes of loading their items and loading their data and pulling information out of their current systems and preparing for integrations and doing a bunch of technical things that come in the middle there. And then after all those tasks are done, they might all be done at the same time. They might be done in serial, depending on how many resources the customer can give us. The very end of it is always some sort of anxiety management, some sort of helping the customer figure out, is this a real concern? Is this not a real concern? Should we be worried about this? And us continuing to reinforce that they can trust us and aborting the process and going back and changing data if we need to, and really kind of being there for them and being a trusted advisor, really, even though we're not paid by the hour or anything else like that. So those are the three big chunks and phases of implementation for us. Within there, there's dozens and dozens of tasks that need to happen, but we can be much more flexible about the order in which those things are done. But those three gates, having a human experience and knowing them and having them know that we know them, getting all the details of information and data and configuration set up, and then calming anxieties and managing expectations and helping them change and sort through conflict. Those are the three big buckets that we move through.
So, Sunny, obviously any ERP implementation process often, or I should say most or many ERP implementation processes driven by reality often requires some sort of ERP customization, right? Software customization. But customization can be good in order to, quote unquote, better fit the operational processes with the product, but isn't too much a danger? Where's the line? What's your thoughts on customization?
Absolutely. So for us, the danger is, does this customization prevent you from getting the benefit of constantly evolving the system to be better? If that does, then we won't agree to it. And hopefully we've ferreted that out early in the sales process that you might even need that customization. So if that's the case, and we're just not a good fit yet, and we'll keep you updated, and maybe in the future we'll be a good fit. So we try to avoid that as much as possible. The customization that ends up happening that's really good are things where there's just a variance and variability in how organizations work. And they're all good. There's no right or wrong answer. So for us, being able to support whether you have work orders that combine different jobs or not, you just do one thing at a time, you're a make to order or engineer to order shop, well, we have to be able to support you in that way and what's important to you. Maybe you're in a food and beverage or regulated industry or an aerospace and you need traceability and serialization. Well, we need to have that. We need to be able to turn that on or off for you. So for us, it's just understanding every one of our customers and knowing, do we fit you or not? If we don't fit you, we will be responsible of keeping you out of the pipeline until we can. And if we do, we need to be really confident and really good at talking with you and giving you the context as to why we think this way. I think the gray area in the middle is where it gets dangerous, where you lose a fight and you just can't get someone to move forward. And it's kind of a small change and it doesn't really block anything. But if there's too many of those, even if you have dozens and dozens of those, it's really an indication of is you never actually got buy-in from the whole team. And whether you customize it or not, kind of in a losing battle. So for us, we just have to revisit that and say, why are they asking us for all these things? We clearly know that this business should fit this. And to solve that root problem, why does this person not believe we're looking out for their best benefit? And we have to change that. And that's a far better exercise than writing some custom code to get someone to shut up, right?
Yeah. So, for sure. So I'm just curious, when you say we are not a good fit, we are just not a good fit, just in terms of software customization specifically, is there some fairly magic number like 5%, 10%? Or if you find yourself saying, hey, we got to go back to the drawing board and kind of customize, 20% of our solution for this customer, at some point, obviously, the time, money, and effort's not worth it. And like you said, at that point, an ERP product is just not a good fit for the business model. Do you have some sort of number like where you just say, hey, we are not a good fit at 10% customization or 20% or 5% or?
I would say that if we need to theoretically customize any percent, I wouldn't call us a good fit. That doesn't mean we don't have to customize at some point in time, but there's already enough of a buffer of customization that's politically driven, that's not even fit driven. Mm. And I think we just need to be honest with ourselves. Is this a good customer or not? The way that I see it is that the landscape of variability for businesses is not infinite. It is possible for us to build the right features and configuration systems that we could fit literally every single business, but we're not going to get there immediately. We're not there right now. We won't get there for years and years and years, but that's what we're working towards. We're working toward a world where if you make something that's physical, we should fit you. You might not want to fit us in that way, and that there's still going to be people that don't want to use a system, but at least from a functional and from a process standpoint, we should fit everybody eventually. So,
So, Sonny, right now, who are the people that you think would be a great fit for Fulcrum?
Certainly people that are excited about technology and about doing things new and better. You know, internally, we have this just this big sign that's in our design process just says better, different, always, right? And for us, it's we want it to be different, but only if it's better. But we want to look at everything that's around. Not everybody wants that. There are some people that are not looking to grow. They don't, you know, have a really long view of their legacy or what they've created. And there may be the end of their business life and we wouldn't be a good fit for you there. The people that are really the best customers of ours are the ones that want to be the best. They want to produce the best. They want to use the best tools. They're looking towards the future. Maybe their new businesses. Those are usually the best fits for us. And from a functionality standpoint, other than a few kind of critical pieces of EDI integration, potentially, or things like that we're missing, we fit just about everybody pretty well. There are some sub-segment groups of customers where some crazy combination of serialization and law tracking and traceability that mathematically makes it impossible for us right now, there are some exceptions there. And there's some other exceptions where people require it to be on-premise and not, you know, not connected to the internet at all. That's a disqualifier. So there's certainly some hard disqualifiers that are out there, but we've had the luxury of being able to spend somebody else's money for the last few years to really build this product up way faster than we would be able to organically. So most of the feature gaps we've had over the last 2 years, 3 years have been plugged. So other than those hard disqualifiers, there's really not that much right now.
Well, very interesting, Sonny. What a great conversation. We appreciate it. We really appreciate the opportunity to have you share more about Fulcrum. But I have one last question here with our interview and our time with you today. And, you know, as we are a podcast dedicated to sharing and collaborative learning, I would like you to distill down your experience, your expertise, your success, and maybe some of your challenges in developing a new ERP product over the last few years. What advice would you offer up to our listeners, right? So whether that's ERP organizational change practitioners, private equity professionals, organizational change professionals, you know, and researchers, ERP software vendors, what would you offer up? What would be Sonny's last three or four sentences of advice when it comes to successful ERP organizational change?
I think one of the things that took me a long time to learn that I think is probably the most important thing that I've learned in my career is that complexity has a cost. Early in my career, I really liked to make things super complex to get the answer almost exact and all over the place. I would introduce these complexities that were better, arguably objectively better in the results that they gave. But each and every one of those pieces of complexity added a cost the organizations that I work with had to absorb. And by and large, those moves were good. They were good from an ROI standpoint. But the thing that I've learned is that it makes that organization much more fragile. And that's something that can't be quantified. So internally at Fulcrum, when we work with our customers, whenever there's an idea that sounds really good, but the fundamental conclusion is that it's adding a huge amount of complexity, we have to be disciplined to say no. That's unlikely to be the right long-term solution, even though it might look like a local maxima. So I think my biggest suggestion is in looking at your business process and how you run things and what software you use, there are lots and lots of great ideas that are out there. And that the success of an ERP implementation or of a product development or even of just machining the parts itself, almost always what you choose not to do and not to include is almost as important as the stuff that you do do. So I would say that's the sneakiest lesson that I think is really important that I try to remind myself of all the time.
Great insight. Thank you. Sonny, thank you so much for your time today. We really, truly appreciate your dedication to your product, to ERP development, and to ERP success. And for our listeners, please check out fulcrumpro.com. That's FulcrumPro.com. And Sonny, if you would, can you tell our listeners how best to get in touch with you or Fulcrum?
Yeah, maybe this is for a limited time only, but anybody who listens to me on a podcast, you can always reach out to me directly. My email is sunny, like the weather, S-U-N-N-Y, at fulcrumpro.com. And I'll also always answer any questions or anything that you'd like to share with me. I'd appreciate it. You just contact me directly.
Sonny, we wish you continued success. We really do. Thank you again. Be well, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure, Sonny.
Thanks for great questions.
You bet. Take care.
Awesome. Talk soon.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the ERP OCJ podcast. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change successes and challenges. We discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change by drawing on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience. We are incredibly grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us in our podcast as we seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community and contribute to its success by bringing research and practice closer together. We want to make sure this is the most useful and insightful ERP podcast you listen to, and we'd love your help in doing so by leaving us feedback and a review. A great place to do so is at Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Listen in Apple Podcasts link, then click Ratings and Reviews, and let us know your thoughts. You can get more info about the show, including show notes and episode highlights for this and all of our episodes, by visiting nesselandassociates.com and clicking the podcast option. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media, hashtag the ERPOCJ. Thanks again for listening. Have a fantastic week.